Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Ian Tuttle of National Review is in for Jim Garrity today. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives, all of them dealing with the presidential race, and all of them really dealing with the Republican side of the presidential race. Ian, you've been calling for this for days, probably weeks, really. You've even considered and perhaps publicly called him a traitor for not getting out as soon as he probably should have. But Dr. Ben Carson released a statement yesterday suggesting strongly that he is about to wrap up his presidential bid. Here is what he said. Quote, "I have decided not to attend the Fox News GOP presidential debate tomorrow night in Detroit," meaning Thursday night. "Even though I will not be in my hometown of Detroit on Thursday, I remain deeply committed to my home nation, America. I do not see a political path forward in light of last evening's Super Tuesday primary results. However, this grassroots movement on behalf of we the people will continue. Along with millions of patriots who have supported my campaign for president, I remain committed to saving America for future generations." Seems like he's calling it quits. He says he'll have more to say about the future of the movement on Friday at CPAC. But when his campaign was asked, does this mean Dr. Carson is suspending his campaign? The answer was no. So maybe he'll do that at CPAC. Ian, it's obvious that he's winding things down, though, when he admits that he can't win and he's not going to go to this debate and I would assume subsequent debates. So Ben Carson is dropping out, clearing the field for a fewer candidates to take on Donald Trump. And he does it in the most Carsonian way possible.
That's right. The whole campaign, we've gotten two different stories. Carson, you know, whatever the headline might be. And he's managed to drag that out to the very, very bitter end. So I will say two things. One, I think that there's a ploy here by Carson to stay relevant, to have the candidates jostling for his endorsement, for his donor list, whatever the case may be. So I think there's a little bit of that at play here. All of that said, obviously, Ben Carson is not going to be president, and he's going to have to drop this officially, technically under the law, sooner rather than later. And so let me say this. I've been very, very harsh on Ben Carson, including, I think, with you, Greg, yesterday. And I think there are good reasons for that. I think that he did a disservice to his supporters and to the Republican Party and the conservative movement at large that he claims to be so passionate about by staying in the race as long as he did. All of that said, Carson has an opportunity to spend the next several years being an ambassador for these causes. He has good relations within certain communities, especially the Black community. He could do a lot to advance the causes that he's espoused. And in my opinion, that would do a lot to help him rebuild the goodwill that I think he lost among a number of conservatives. And of course, I should add that his not being on the debate stage is a smart move tonight. It's not simply buckling under to the circumstances, but ideally will create time in which Rubio and Cruz can go after Trump more directly. And so it just clears that space for them. So all things told, that's a qualified thank you to Dr. Ben Carson for finally dropping this charade.
Here's the question, though, Ian. He may officially suspend his campaign before Saturday when we have all these other states. Many of them are caucuses. And you know what happens when confusing statements are released by the Carson campaign right before caucuses. If he has, in fact, not officially suspended, would any campaign be wrong for saying to Carson supporters, look, looks like your guy's done, might want to come on board with us, or will that result in another tongue-lashing from Donald Trump?
Oh, I'm sure it will result in another tongue-lashing from Donald Trump. There's no question about that. The problem is that the longer Carson isn't technically off the ballot, the more he holds these voters hostage. There's just a core of 6-10% or whatever the case may be who are going to support him, unless he comes out and says, don't support me, I'm no longer eligible. That's definitely a problem. And like I said, I think that part of that is this is his effort to stay relevant. I think that, and that's very unfortunate. And again, it's part of the reason why I find all this somewhat disreputable. And reason that I hope you can wrap this up sooner rather than later and get on to more wholesome and noble causes. I should add, just as a Super Tuesday fun fact, Ben Carson finished ahead of John Kasich in 7 of 11 states. I tweeted out yesterday, nudge, nudge, Governor.
Hey, Ohio's the springboard to the nomination.
That's right.
Anyway, I'm sure we'll hear some fun folksy tales from Governor Kasich tonight on the stage, but let's move to the second martini now. It's time for Martini Debate with Ian Tuttle of National Review and Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And it relates to a speech that, as we record this, just concluded in Salt Lake City. Mitt Romney explaining in a fairly brief speech, but a very clear speech, why he believes Donald Trump should not be president. Here are some of the arguments that Mitt made during that speech.
He's playing the members of the American public for suckers. He gets a free ride to the White House, and all we get is a lousy hat. Think of Donald Trump's personal qualities. The bullying, the greed, the showing off, the misogyny, the absurd third-grade theatrics. His domestic policies would lead to recession. His foreign policies would make America and the world less safe. He has neither the temperament nor the judgment to be president. And his personal qualities would mean that America would cease to be a shining city on a hill.
So there's Governor Romney. I think you and I would be in complete agreement with his assessment in those clips of Donald Trump and why he is not the choice for conservatives for president, Ian. There's two problems, though. One is that while I think a lot of Republicans have respect for Mitt Romney on one level or another, he is intimately associated with the Republican leadership, the Republican Party. And if you're predisposed to Donald Trump, you loathe the Republican Party. And so you need somebody other than Mitt Romney to make this argument, as well as Mitt made it. He is a messenger that I would imagine most people who like Donald Trump or are inclined to like Donald Trump whenever the schedule gets to their state are not necessarily going to listen to. And whether it's Trump's constant insults of Romney, that he was a loser and he'll dismiss him that way, or just that they're tired of listening to Republicans tell them what to think and what to do. But there's one other moment, too, and these involve two clips that are relatively long. Mitt was talking about how Trump would be very different from the presidents we've had in the past. Here's two quick clips on that.
We've been blessed with great presidents, with giants among us, men of character, integrity, and selflessness have led our nation from the very beginning. None were perfect. Each surely made mistakes. But in every case, they acted out of the desire to do what was right for America and for the cause of freedom. I understand the anger Americans feel today. In the past, our presidents have channeled that anger and forged it into resolve, into endurance and high purpose, and into the will to defeat the enemies of freedom. Our anger was transformed into energy directed for good. Mr. Trump is directing our anger for less than noble purposes.
And Ian, you can probably guess where I'm going with this. Romney basically lumped every of the first 43, 44 presidents into the category of people who did honorable things for the right reason to advance the cause of freedom, and they channeled anger properly into positive action. He never mentioned President Obama in a negative way. And one of the things you hear about with Romney and some of these other Republicans who are going so negative on Trump is, where were you when it came time to oppose Barack Obama? Which, in a large sense, is a very unfair criticism because Republicans across the spectrum have been very much vocal and opposed to Obama across the spectrum. But to leave Obama out and to basically declare him a champion of freedom and someone who channels anger into positive change is not going to make people happy. I thought that was a kind of a glaring omission from that speech.
That's not an unfair point. And unfortunately, that point will get a lot of play because I think there's an unfair interpretation, exactly what you said, that, you know, Romney, seeing this all across Twitter over the aftermath of Romney's speech, you know, Romney went harder on Trump than he ever went on Obama in 2012. That's nonsense. I mean, the man ran a general election campaign against Obama for 7-8 months, however long. You can go back to watch that first debate where he absolutely crushed Obama. I mean, This is more a carryover from 2008 when John McCain didn't really seek to land any particular blow against Obama. I think that's an unfair criticism. Although your point's well taken. All of that said, I'm a little more sanguine about this, in part because there are certain aspects in which I think Romney is actually the perfect messenger. So one, I think that a whole lot of Trump supporters are locked in, a whole lot of, you know, who is this speech for? To the extent that it was for actual voters, it was for late deciding voters. And we've seen late deciding voters break decisively for Rubio, who presumably would be the candidate that Romney would endorse if he does, in fact, choose to endorse. Some of those might be encouraged that by Romney coming out, being the most recent standard bearer for the Republican Party. The second point is that Romney is perhaps the most credible person to hit Trump where it hurts, which is on his business record and on all the sort of nefarious seeming problems with his professional record. You have one uber successful businessman who was trashed all throughout 2012 as a vulture capitalist and all of this, the 1% of the 1%. He actually has the authority to come out and say, you know what? Donald Trump isn't actually a very good businessman. You know what? I know what complex tax returns look like. I know what it's like to be audited. I can tell you that Donald Trump is hiding something. I think that he has sort of the right background to be delivering that message. You saw that in the debate last Thursday when Rubio attacked Trump on hiring illegal immigrants. Trump just immediately shot back, well, I'm the only person up here who's hired anyone, which is a nonsense counter-argument, but you can't do it to Romney. So I think that there's something good to be said there. Say that the third and final point is there's just something to be said for honor, for coming out and telling it like it is. And a lot of people will go back and say, you know, Romney looked for Trump's endorsement and in 2012 and he got it and the rest. Romney should just come out and say, you know what, I was wrong. I shouldn't have taken Trump's endorsement. We knew then he was a clown, but we didn't know that he was sort of an aspiring authoritarian, and he can easily do away with those criticisms. And I said that was the final, but I'll add one more, which is no one else is going to get the type of press coverage that Mitt Romney got an hour ago. None of the other candidates have inspired the type of interest that Romney did for a single speech. I mean, Mitt Romney delivered a more succinct, powerful and punchy case in 25 minutes against Trump than Jeb Bush did, in several months on the campaign. And when you've got the media so eager to crown Trump so that they can crush him and the party he represents come November, it makes a certain amount of sense for Romney to get up there, drag the cameras with him, and make this last stand against Trump.
Classy insult. I guess that's what
yes. I love that Mitt Romney. Donald Trump says he's very smart on his foreign policy. He's very, very not smart. That was such a Romney. you've got the man up, the Republican candidate up there who's referring to women's menstrual cycles, and then you've got Mitt Romney who thinks dumb is too crude an insult.
On to the crazy martini now, Ian. And in his speech, Romney talked about a myriad of things that he believes disqualify Donald Trump for the presidency: character, his positions on issues both foreign and domestic, his temperament. And he said the classic Tapper Trump exchange about the Ku Klux Klan on Sunday, in which Trump was given three chances to disavow David Duke and other white supremacist groups. And he obviously did not do that. Trump will point out that he's done it many times before and many times since, and so there really should be no question on the issue. But it came up again on Morning Joe today with Trump on the phone with Mika Brzezinski, and here's how it went.
So you just called Mitt Romney a catastrophe and a disaster. Those are the two words I caught of many. You've called Ted Cruz a liar and a bad guy, Marco a lightweight. How would you characterize, to put this to rest, how would you characterize in more words than one, David Duke?
David Duke is a bad person who I disavowed on numerous occasions over the years. And the one question that was asked to me, I guess on CNN, he's having a great time. He talked about groups of people. And I don't like to disavow groups if I don't know who they are. I mean, you could have Federation of Jewish Philanthropies in groups. I don't know who the groups are.
Federation of Jewish Philanthropies. They're so well known. I don't know if that exists, Ian, to tell you the truth, but Jews and white supremacists, they're always hanging out together.
Yeah, you know, that's just a regular party. I saw this, was absolutely stunned. Tapper referred to David Duke and white supremacists. Trump repeated Duke's name, repeated white supremacists back to him, and now the spin is maybe included in that group were, you know, these Jewish charities. This is so perfectly Trump. He disavows David Duke and then manages to somehow backpedal the disavowing and to make an excuse for what he did the other morning. This is the type of stuff, Mitt Romney was absolutely right about this, this is the type of stuff that is going to be on your television screens and on YouTube relentlessly for the next 8 months. There's already an ad out by Our Principles PAC, which is a conservative expressly anti-Trump PAC, which has a number of these instances looped over the course of a minute and a half. It's just a brutal ad. And if a conservative anti-Trump PAC is doing that, just imagine what Democrats are going to do for the next 8 months. And not only to Trump, but to every senator who's running as a Republican, every House member who's up for re-election, every state legislator who has an R next to their name, Trump is going to be an anchor on every single one of them. That Trump supporters don't realize how bad he's going to be for their own hopes of putting him in the White House and having a legislature that can actually do something is really quite astonishing.
There are a lot of problems with the I never apologize strategy, and this is one of them. Instead of just saying, I screwed up, I don't know what I was thinking, that was totally wrong, I disavow and I made a huge mistake in that interview, let's move on, it just keeps going because of the inability to admit that something was done wrong.
The really frustrating thing is all the people who are, you know, based from my point of view, the people who are coming out and defending him saying, you know, well, Donald Trump didn't do X, but, you know, people on the left don't disavow Al Sharpton or, you know, all these people. That's quite beside the point. If somebody's a bad guy, you disavow them every single time. You know, we don't make exceptions for David Duke, on a couple of occasions because Barack Obama hangs out with Jeremiah Ryder or whatever the case may be. It's just nonsense. And that's a really sort of dangerous impulse to be indulging on the right, that we can't come out and call bad people bad people.
Quiet night at the debate, I'm guessing.
Well, I'm hoping that Cruz and Rubio continue to train their fire exclusively on Trump. I think if they don't, that would be a mistake and back to another point of dishonor. But, you know, looking at the results for Super Tuesday, if they know it's good for them, we'll have a repeat of last Thursday and I'll be screaming at my computer in my apartment again.
Do you follow the Garrity rule that when Kasich gets a question, it's time for snacks and to use the bathroom?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Go out, you know, grab another beer. Yeah. It used to be Carson, but now it's going to be Kasich. So.
All right. Well, you and I will be together tomorrow to break down the most recent presidential debate. Ian, always good to talk to you. See you tomorrow.
All right. Thanks, Greg.
Ian Tuttle of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us and tune in again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.